Another episode of Get Real with Casey Kasem is coming to you right now. This episode features Eric Moody, someone you may know from his work providing NFL, NBA, and WNBA content for ESPN. We had a great conversation about so many things, including playing football in college, starting out with fantasy basketball, playing the bass guitar, keeper leagues, being full-time in the industry, his mother's love of music being passed on to him, and much more. You can follow Eric on Twitter at Eric N. Moody. You can follow me on Twitter at DKCKasem, as well as the podcast at GetReal_pod. This podcast is a proud member of the DAP Network. Thank you all so much for listening to this podcast. Every episode is so much fun for me to be a part of because I get to help share other people's stories. I appreciate everyone who listens. If you have a second to share with a friend, that would be dope. But honestly, just appreciate you tuning in. And now, here's the episode with Eric Moody. People might not know, but the behind the scenes thing is it's been in the works. We're here now and super, super excited. I just want to dive right in, Eric, and kind of just get to know you from an early age when you were growing up, and just to kind of find out if you had some sort of connection with sports growing up, whether that be watching sports, playing sports, or whatever.
Yeah, for me, I would say my first memory of sports, and I was thinking about this earlier because I was kind of watching some old like NBA like highlights and documentaries and stuff, is like the first sport I kind of fell in love with was basketball. So if you think back, like in the 90s, the mecca of NBA, you know, just watching like Michael Jordan, you know, Karl Malone, you know, Shaquille O'Neal, all these different players, and that's where I kind of fell like in love with sports. I actually did not play football until I was actually in high school, and so then at that point, that's whenever, you know, I really ended up getting into football. And so ended up playing like offensive line and just really enjoyed, I would say, a couple of things with the game. For one, you know, the physicality of it, especially playing like offensive line, kind of that mentality is that, you know, you're moving like another man, like against his will, you know, based on kind of what the play calls for. So that was one thing, but also like the intellectual side of it, like that living, breathing, like chess match aspect, you know, when you have a play that you're trying to execute, the defense is trying to stop you, the defense is showing you different things. And I would say that really kind of caused my love of sports. And I'll give you another fun fact, and I'll pass it back to you. Is, I really did not get into like fantasy football. It was a buddy that I had. I became really good friends. And I was actually in his wedding. Whenever I worked in the financial services industry at Chase Bank as a financial advisor, we were talking. He's like, "Yeah, man, I know you played football and into football. Have you ever played fantasy football?" I was like, "I've heard of it, but I've never played." So he invited me to his league, and I was immediately addicted after that.
I mean, isn't that how it goes? Once you get a little taste of it, then you just want to keep doing more and more. So,
exactly.
So with the sports aspect, do you have any – I know you named – some players from the NBA that are like iconic. Is there any moment that you can remember from when you were younger that sticks out as like a really awesome sports moment that you can just remember so clearly?
Yeah, I would say it's a couple. I'll give you one NBA one and another one for football, you know, the NFL. I would say for the NFL, it was really watching two Super Bowls in particular, like the one where the Green Bay Packers defeated like the New England Patriots. This is pre-Tom Brady, you know, with Drew Bledsoe, where they won that Super Bowl. But then the subsequent year for whenever they played the Denver Broncos, where John Elway won his first Super Bowl. I just remember those two Super Bowls, like, vividly, and especially the one with the Broncos, whenever they won. I know that was a impressive team, you know, with Ed McCaffrey and, you know, Rod Smith, you know, Terrell Davis. So it was just a really exciting Super Bowl to watch. In my opinion, still one of the best Super Bowls there ever, you know, that has ever been taking place. So I would say on the NBA side of things, really just thinking about, you know, being able, you know, growing up and being able to watch like all of those NBA championships that that Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls won. It's like looking back, I'm like, those teams were tremendous just with the talent that they had. But then even with watching like, you know, the Last Dance documentary, even able to learn more behind the scenes on what led to those championships and kind of what happened in Jordan's career behind the scenes, things we weren't privy to, obviously, when watching it at a younger age. So I think those are two sports memories that come to mind in games.
And were you at this time, were you more of a fan of sports in general, or did you have any specific teams that you were like, diehard about?
Yeah, I would say like for NFL, I've been a diehard New Orleans Saints fan for years. That was the team that was closest to us growing up in Alabama. So this was before the Jacksonville Jaguars franchise existed. So I've always been a big New Orleans fan. And then on the basketball side of things, whenever the you know, the New Orleans Hornets were there, you know, before the Pelicans and all that took place. Yeah, so the NBA and NFL, those were my teams. Those are my teams.
That's awesome. Yeah, my I've got family in Alabama, and yeah, they're Saints fans as well, because it's just what you got to do. I'm like, I can't imagine living in a place where there's not an NFL team. Like, that's like our criteria if we move. Like, there's got to be, well, you know, so at least they got to play the, you know, we're going to get into that later. But so you talked about playing football. Did you play any other sports, or was football your major thing?
You know what's funny? This has been so laid back. I was like, maybe I was speaking loud enough. I didn't even have my mic here. It's amazing. Casey, you put me at ease here. This will probably come out a little bit louder.
Hey, wow. I mean, yeah. I mean, you know what? See, you know, it is a nice, chill, laid back situation. I didn't even notice it. Honestly, to me, it sounds like whatever I'm talking to anybody else. And when I listen to it back, it sounds fine. So, you know.
All right. No, that's fine. But go ahead.
Good. Oh, yeah. Let's see. I can actually stay on track this time and remember. It's I was going to ask you about other sports did you play other sports, or did you attempt to play other sports?
Yeah, the only two sports for me were I played basketball growing up. I just didn't really have the body of like a basketball player. I wasn't really like tall and lean. I was more like bulky, think, you know, offensive lineman trying to play basketball. And so, you know, I love the game. You know, this is, I'll give you another fun fact. Like my nickname growing up playing basketball, so I was a huge Magic Johnson fan, was Magic Moody. You know, I kid you not. Did not have the ball handling skills of Magic, but you know, football, you know, basketball. Like, I never tried to play like baseball. I played soccer for like a short amount of time, but I would say you're looking at basketball, football, and I did powerlifting for a little bit, which is an easy thing to transition to from, you know, playing football, of course. Those have been my sports. So,
and when you were growing up, did you have, you know, our kids want to grow up to be, I want to be the president, I want to be a teacher, I want to be a police officer. What did you want to be when you were younger?
I actually remember saying I wanted to be a veterinarian.
Oh, that's an awesome choice. Hey, I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. Because it's crazy, when we're growing up, we don't think that doing anything in the, I mean, you don't, back when we were growing up, fantasy football, like, what? I don't know. And then on top of that, you know, that isn't something that you can actually think of as a job, because it's, you know, it's fantasy football, right? But like, how did you brought up fantasy football earlier, and how you came about being involved with it and your friend. Did you guys, when you first started, was it just a normal redraft league, or how was it set up exactly?
Yeah, this league, it was great. It was great, because it was this classic redraft. It was only 10 teams, so it never ended up getting to 12 or 14. And it was a group of gentlemen that we all knew each other very, very well. And we had an ongoing text message thread that was going on. We were very active in the message boards of the league. And it was so intense and fun that I would even have this running gag for whenever I would actually put together and write week by week like notes on the league and kind of have fun with it, since we were most of us were based in Dallas at the time. You know, Jason Garrett was the head coach, and so I would even imitate Jason Garrett's like press conferences, and I would do a press conference like for the league. It would be fun.
That's awesome.
I would use all his classic, you know, monotone, you know, voice and all his little taglines. And it was hilarious. It still cracks me up to this day. But yeah, it was an old school redraft league. You know, the draft was online, but there was another league that we participated in. Some of the gentlemen that were in this 10-team redraft league were part of this league. But it was a 12-team keeper league with kind of crazy Scott Fishbowl-esque type rules and bonuses tied to it. And that was like an event like every summer, because it was a live draft. We kind of had like the draft board, kind of like how you have back there. But it was kind of like
projected onto like a you know, an LCD, you know, TV, you know, laptop, spreadsheet and everything up there. It was such a fun league because it was like an event. It would be like a 4 hour, 5 hour party, and it was an auction draft too, which made it even better.
Oh yeah, like, and for those out there who haven't ever participated in a live draft before, can you expand on why it's so awesome, just so that people can get excited for it?
Yeah, I would say a live draft is the most fun because you can see everyone's reaction, and you've got everyone that's there. They walk in, you know, they may have their laptop, you know, they may have their cheat sheets or tiers or rankings like printed out. Then you have some people that just don't have anything. You're just like, is that person going to be the mark for this draft? And I'm like the con man or hustler or whatever. Is that going to be the mark? And so, you know, you have that whole dynamic, and everyone's not trying to tell or give hints to their strategy, you know, or players that they like. But then whenever what made the auction so fun is that, I'll give you like an example, is that you know, you have all those different dynamics where someone throws out like a player, you know, that they really want, and you're sitting there watching as the price on this player continues to escalate and it gets higher. Like, you're like, you're thinking it's like Shark Tank. You're like, oh man, I'm out. But then it's funny whenever you're getting towards the latter parts of the draft and you have like a player that no one has heard of or is that familiar with, that you get a really good value. Now I'm going to drop a name, Casey, where you're going to be like, wow, I haven't heard that name in quite some time. Insert the Obi-Wan Kenobi gif is Jordan Cameron.
Oh, remember? My. Yes, remember, I do.
Remember when he had that great season with the Browns where he was like a sleeper?
Yes.
He definitely delivered on his average draft position or lack thereof, because I ended up putting a bid out on him. I think the bid was like $2. And then the auctioneer was just like, it's like Jordan Cameron, $2. And it's like everyone had this perplexed look on their face. It's like, it's just like off of Big Trouble in Little China with Jack Burton. It's like, who? Like, Jordan Cameron, $2. Like, let's come on, auctioneer, let's get it going. And it's just like my buddy, because we've been talking about Jordan Cameron like all summer, you know, he could be a sleeper. He was kind of like this, like, because he's like, he knows he's gonna get a great value on this player. And so it's just to tie that back to your answer, is that I'm like, that's the kind of fun that you'll have like with the live draft, seeing reactions, having that camaraderie. Makes it, you'll be even tighter with your league mates. And then if you have like good food that's there, you know, adult beverages, if that's your kind of thing, it just makes the whole experience much more fun. And I would say, don't have it at like Buffalo Wild Wings or Dave and Buster's or something like that. Get one of your buddies to commit to hosting it. It makes it so much better. Everyone pitch in, of course, but yeah.
Yeah, please do. I mean, well, no, because I end up being the person that hosts it most of the time, mm-hmm. which is fine. I don't care. I like hosting it.
Yeah.
But I'm like one of those like overly like controlling people. It's like, it has to go the way that I need. Yeah, and I'm freaking out the whole time. And I'm like,
yeah,
I need to calm down. So yeah, the adult beverages that you brought up can kind of help with that situation. So when you were playing football, you mm-hmm. played at the college level as well, correct?
I did. Yeah, I played at a 1AA school for a couple of seasons called Nickel State in Thibodaux, Louisiana. So
awesome. And yeah, that experience for you, how exactly did that go?
I felt like it went well. But one thing that I noticed is that, you know, the talent level from when you're in high school and you're kind of on the recruiting radar, and the recruiting back when I played was a lot different. You didn't have all these videos or Rivals and all these different sites where you got all your YouTube clips and stuff that are out there. It's just scouts that are coming by. They got the VHS tape. Hey, here's some game film on this guy. And you talk to them and you get all the letters and things like that. And you'd have like your official visits and all that kind of stuff. So it was definitely right at the tail end of kind of the old school way, you know, of doing things. But I would say the experience overall was great. I would say one thing personally that I learned from football that I think it applied to everything else that I've done after that, is that you can kind of transform yourself into whatever you want to be just by putting like the work in. And so I just remember going in as a, you know, like in high school, for where, you know, I was like a lazy, you know, video game playing, constantly just overweight, out of shape dude. And I was like, just kind of came up with the idea, I want to try to go play football. And I remember that spring training was like rough because I was completely out of shape. I felt like I was like, you know, just exhausted and out of it after each practice, but I kept coming back. That's the thing. I kept coming back, you know, I improved each day, and going into that summer and then that first season, it's just putting the work in, you know, getting extra workouts in, staying after practice, and just really building like a love for the game. And it's just with anything that you do, if you have a game plan, you have goals, you put the work in, you can transform, you know, yourself or accomplish things that you never thought that you could. And so I think that was one takeaway I had just from playing football in general that really stuck with me for the rest of my life. And it's something in the mindset that I approach to content creation as well. I'll say that's probably my biggest takeaway from it. But the experience overall was great, you know, high school and college, you know, the friendships that you make, you know, being in the trenches, you know, sweating together, you know, going through the ups and downs together. It's very tough to replicate that. I guess when you're, you know, an adult and you're working and that kind of thing. So
for sure. And it, you know, being that age as well and having, you know, fantasy football, did you start playing fantasy football while you were in college, or what was the timeline exactly? Cause I'm always bad with timelines.
Oh no, you're good. Yeah. It was actually, it was after. Yeah. It was, okay. It was probably how many years after college? Maybe like 6 years after college.
And when you started playing fantasy football and then, you know, you got hooked, did you start joining more leagues?
Yeah, let me kind of think back through into that time. It was, okay, so, you know, I made pretty much every mistake that the rookie fantasy player would make, you know, that first year. I didn't quite finish last in the leagues. I didn't have, like, a silly punishment to do, but I'm a very competitive person. And, again, I'm just like, you know what? I'm like, this fantasy football thing is fun. I'm going to make sure that I don't finish last going into the next year. And so – really, after that season ended, I started kind of preparing, you know, kind of my, you know, preparing for the next season, you know, just with following the news even more closely. But I think one thing that really helped me out quite a bit was I actually kind of went immediately after the fantasy football season ended into fantasy basketball for the first time. I was like, okay, you know, I played fantasy football. I love basketball. I know we talked about that earlier. And that's what I ended up doing. So I ended up joining. And our original league was hosted on ESPN, you know, too. So I was like, all right, ESPN has fantasy basketball. Let me just dive into as many fantasy basketball leagues as I can. And I ended up joining, I think it may have been like 7 or 8. They were like free leagues. And so I just wanted to get some reps in, you know, just with, you know, doing positional tiers for fantasy basketball and having my rankings, identifying sleepers. And I just joined like some head-to-head leagues since it was eerily similar to with the scoring, like fantasy football. And it just kind of took off from there. You know, I still, you know, monitored NFL news, did the fantasy basketball stuff, followed the draft more closely, you know, free agency. And so then going into that next season, I just kind of turned into a juggernaut, ended up winning, you know, winning my local league and just kind of went on from there. But I'll kind of tie a bow on that kind of story with this, is that just from doing the whole financial services thing, kind of working, you know, like as an advisor, I always like giving people advice, always like doing kind of like coaching, you know, things like that. That's how I met my buddy who even invited me to fantasy football, because he was job shadowing me. And I always, and this is where I kind of got the bug for content creation, because I just always like helping people, you know, giving advice. And I would just be out at places and we'd start talking about football. I was like, hey man, you play fantasy football? Of course I do. Tell me about your team, man. And so we would just kind of have like a conversation, you know, back and forth. And so I kind of ultimately transitioned after a couple of years of playing just in trying to give, you know, people like advice and help where I could. And that's what kind of led me to the streets of Twitter, starting an account and tweeting out stats and, just trying to become like part of the community. So that's what kind of happened there.
And Twitter's been such a big part of so many people's experience when it comes to putting out fantasy content. And how did you exactly stumble across fantasy Twitter in the first place?
Let me think. Okay. Well, I, in that local league I was telling you about, I've mentioned the story before. I have not mentioned this analyst's name, but if I did, you would know who this person is. And so, you know, I ended up having like a team that I drafted for where, you know, I was like, you know what? And Casey, I know you've been there before, and people that are watching or listening have been there too. You're like, I don't know what to think about this team.
Yeah,
I don't know how this team is going to do. You know, I followed my research and I made the choices, but I just love to get a second set of eyes on this. And so I just emailed this analyst that will not be named, you know, nice detailed breakdown of like my squad, you know, hey, here's who I picked, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, I hope I get a response back. And I didn't get a response back from this fantasy analyst. And I was just thinking, I was like, you know what? That's okay. I don't necessarily need to get validation on this team, you know, that I put together. You know, I did my research, it worked. It's just like, and I'm thinking about when giving people like investment advice, if I recommend XYZ or ABC mutual fund, it's like you use your research or your due diligence process to make the recommendation. Same thing with this. And so that was kind of like the, I would say, kind of putting gasoline on the fire. And this kind of ties back to your question about, I'm going to join, you know, Twitter, make my account like a fantasy football account. Because I had an active Twitter account, and all of a sudden just started doing, this is in maybe 2015. You know, I just decided to have it focus more on fantasy football. And I just ended up tweeting out stats, you know, having different opinions. And what I did a lot of was just, you know, commenting on a lot of tweets that were out there and, you know, articles and stuff that people put out there. But I would say something that I noticed that a lot of people were not doing that I said that that's an angle for me to get in is that you see all these larger accounts for where they're getting pelted with all these questions. You know, who should I start? Should I start player A or player B? Who should I start out of these three or four players? And you have people where they like tag, you know, three or four analysts on. I just noticed that, hey, a lot of these questions are not getting answered. So I think that's an opportunity. In the midst of chaos, there's always opportunity, you know, to echo like the Sun Tzu quote. And that's what I ended up doing. I just started responding to these people. Well, hey, I know you asked these individuals, but hey, here's my recommendation. And so I kind of built my following initially that way on Twitter and just kind of got into the mix, into the conversation. And that ultimately led to kind of writing opportunities, which we can dive into if you'd like.
Go
ahead.
Real. I would love for you to dive into that because it, mm-hmm. you know, going from just giving advice out on Twitter to mm-hmm. actually like putting out content where you're writing is like a leap. So yeah. How did you go about starting that?
Yeah. And so the thing is like when you give advice and stuff that's out there, you want to have like a rationale like behind it. And this will kind of tie back to the, I guess my background, and then I'll kind of weave it into the content creation is that every job that I've had has been kind of sales or presentation type related. And it's the same thing with content creation. You know, if you're going to have like an opinion, you want to give advice, you got to give a rationale to it to ultimately sell people on why they should do this. And I've always, in fantasy football, it's like an intangible like product in a way. It's like not tangible. I can't hold up, hey, here's a widget. You need to buy this widget. And so like I've always been like in sales. Like in college, I sold Cutco. You know, I was very successful at that, you know, as a sales rep, you know, as an assistant manager and a district manager with the company. I just didn't want to do that like professionally. And so I ended up out of school. I worked for a beer, wine, and spirits distributor. Very fun job. I probably have some stories I can probably tell people, you know, about that job. Very, very fun job in the New Orleans area that I had. And then ultimately ended up moving to the financial services for where, again, it's not a widget. It's not a tangible product for where you're convincing people and educating them on strategies, ideas, different investments, things that they should invest in. So I took that approach really like with fantasy, you know, with giving out advice on Twitter and on the content side of things. So I always treat it like a business from day one. You know, don't post, my whole mantra was like, don't tweet anything that you'd be ashamed, like if your significant other saw it, your family, friends, or coworkers. And that's kind of served me well because we know people have kind of stepped on landmines, but anyway, we won't dive into that or to those stories, but you kind of get where I'm coming from. And with the content creation side, I just had someone that reached out to me and they were just like, hey, I've kind of seen some of the stuff you put out on Twitter. Have you ever thought about writing? And I was like, I'm not currently writing right now. Hey, but it is something that I'm open to because I, you know, started off, you know, I wasn't like an English major and, you know, I've always just kind of liked the whole writing, you know, process or just kind of communicating and talking to people, you know, again, kind of giving advice. And so that ultimately led to a writing opportunity, a website, Fantasy Football Locker Room. It does not exist anymore for where you're able to step in, you know, write content, you know, get feedback on what you're writing. And it's really all about reps. You know, I think about like Malcolm Gladwell, right? The Outliers book, the 10,000 hour rule. And if you want to be world class at something, you got to put the work and time in. And I think that's important. So if you're going to take this journey, just be prepared to put the time in because you can't really write like one article a month and expect to be successful. Hate to burst your bubble, but it's just not going to work that way. And so, you know, writing content and doing things on that end, which put me in a position to kind of create content, get something out there, get feedback, take that feedback, implement it quickly. You know, again, put your ego outside the door. If something's great, it's great. You know, if it sucks, it sucks. Get the feedback, make it better, put it back out there, and just kind of keep, you know, keep repeating that process. So that ultimately led to opportunities of, you know, writing with Fantasy Football Locker Room to, for where I was in a position to reach out to like fantasy pros and say, hey, I'd love to write, you know, for fantasy pros. And here's some sample articles, and, you know, kind of made that connection. They're like, hey, we'd love to have you. Here's your first assignment. Great. You know, you put that out there. Then on the other side, you know, you always want to be forward thinking. And it's like, you know what? And I'm just thinking, I really like what they're doing over there at like RotoViz. And this is like back in 2015. You know, they use a lot of stats, you know, a lot of, you know, advanced stats. That's kind of right up my alley, just with the investment side of things. I'm going to reach out to RotoViz. And so I just reach out to RotoViz. Now, this isn't, it wasn't like, I'm going to send like a DM, you know, let's do some networking, as people say. It was just saying, hey, I'm a writer. I'd love to have an opportunity. Love your work. Let's see where this goes. And, you know, I was able to reach out to RotoViz and get a writing opportunity with them. So I'll hit pause for a second just to kind of give someone some advice for where, if they're like, you know, think if they're going along for this journey, it's that the way that you can kind of quote unquote network, or as I like to say, to make friends, is that if you're writing for a couple of different sites, you're getting to know the other writers or content creators on those teams. You're getting to know the editors, and allow your body of work that you have out there really speak for itself. That's how you can make friends and get traction along the way. And so I will tell you this, I'll dive a little bit deeper on the RotoViz piece. I'm still trying to keep my timeline straight in the head as well. But but like with the RotoViz piece, it's like with, you know, Matt Friedman, you know, with Frank, you know, fantasy douche. Hopefully Frank will come back to us into the space. And Sean Siegel too, you know, Mr. You know, zero running back strategy. The feedback that they gave me on the content that I created was like invaluable. What I loved about the RotoViz team is that they would end up sending like, you know, emails on kind of things that they like, you know, things that they would recommend tweaking, and just things that you can implement very, very quickly. I know they kind of have a process on how they like to do content, you know, which I love. You got to start off with that thesis, and you've got to find a way to support it. And again, that was correlated very closely with what I was doing with things on the investment and financial advice side. And so it really resonated with me. But, you know, taking their feedback and implementing it quickly and learning along the way, that really accelerated my, I'll say, my content creation journey. And again, I always thank those three individuals for that. Anytime I chat with like Friedman, I'm just like, you just don't know how invaluable, you know, the feedback, you know, really was. And so, so I would say at this point, if you're looking at the timeline, we're probably looking at about maybe 2016, you know, 2017, somewhere in there. It's just, you just want to keep making friends and writing for as many sites as you can handle. You know, you don't want to overload yourself, because it's, you know, I've just seen a lot of, I guess the best way to put it, a lot of flames that like are burning brightly, but then they fizzle out. And so you want to think of it with the long-term perspective. So don't take on more than, I would say, what you can't handle. Because the last thing you want is have an editor depending on you for a deadline with something and you can't deliver. That's the worst. That's going to hurt your credibility. It's going to hurt, you know, your growth and the progression that you're looking to have. And so you just want to continually kind of add on sites as you have the capacity, you know, to write for. And then over time, it always helps to kind of remove some sites if they're not aligned with like your long-term like plan. And so the reason I'm saying that is I've written it like a lot of places. I have people that are like, what are some places you haven't written for?
Yeah, right.
Like, I've written for like, you know, Fantasy Pros. I've written for, you know, Fantasy Football Locker Room. I've written for RotoViz. I've written for Fantasy Data. I've written for Gridiron Experts. I've written some articles for Dynasty League Football, you know, 4 for 4. You know, of course, you know, The Athletic, and now, you know, everything is just consolidated over at ESPN. But I've got some other avenues or branches that we can step off on. But Casey, I want to pass it back to you. Am I hitting on what you need here, what you're looking for?
Yes, you are hitting on exactly what I need. Look at you. You're like throwing me these softballs. I can just, you know, give you another question branching off of the stuff, because I was in kind of in awe while you were talking just now about all that, because I don't think enough people pay attention to where they're writing. They just want to write, and they think the first opportunity they get, they should, you know, jump on it. Well, the thing is, you want to make sure, you know, that the site and your values align. And and with the RotoViz thing, you finding like a site that did what you were interested in doing
is
very important. So yeah, I think that's great advice for people listening that are trying to start writing. And how do you come up with ideas? Is it hard for you, or do you have a certain way that you go about coming up with things to write about?
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things. You always want to have a, whether if you're old school and you like, you know, like an actual like notebook, or if you're, you know, a tech head and you like to have like different writing apps like Google Keep or something like that on your phone, just always have something where you can take notes, like article ideas, you know, article kind of concepts, all that stuff kind of pops into my head at like at random times. And so I usually just kind of take notes on everything about potential like article ideas, you know, and it could come into my mind while I'm watching like an NBA game or like a, you know, NFL game, or I could be walking the dog, which a lot of my ideas do come like when I'm walking the dog or outside and maybe at the park, you know, with a wife and kids. And I'm just thinking, that's a pretty good idea. And I'll just take my phone out real quick and I'll kind of type that down, get it out of my mind onto something that I can refer to, because don't kid yourself. It's like, you know what? I can remember everything that pops into mind. No, you cannot. Stop kidding yourself. Stop it. And then just write it down and you can refer back to it like a little bit later. And so that's really helped out a lot, because you can, and the thing is, like with ideas, it's like some ideas are great ideas, which you're like, that's a really good idea. Even if it's an idea that you think is like a bad or a terrible idea, it can be a good idea. You just have to think about it. Think of it like a sales pitch. Like if I'm going to position this to someone, how can I sell them on this? And you want to think about what are the objections that you may get and try to answer those. It's just like sales 101. Like what could be the potential objections that I would hear from this prospect? And then you want to try to have like a way to handle that objection, or the better way to go about it is that address that objection in the content for where it doesn't necessarily come up. And you can reference that. And it's like, hey, I know what you may be thinking. Player A is in no position to exceed expectations here. Let me enlighten you with A, B, or C, and you can weave that in. So those are just some ideas as far as like of content creation. I kind of had some other things that kind of popped into my mind. I had a really intriguing thread on Twitter. I want to hit on some things there that I think would be valuable for people like to know, especially for those that are kind of up and coming in the industry and looking to really kind of make a name for themselves, is that you just want to try to be like ahead of the curve. Like, and I'm kind of have a parallel with this, is that, you know, I've got someone that I know, and I won't mention the person's name, that was really, that I've known for years from my previous career, that's like, you know what, man, it's like what you were able to do is like, it's just like from old school, that's awesome, you know, that part right there. And so, and it just kind of had me thinking about like advice that I can give this individual like to help them. And so I'm going to kind of spread that to everyone here, is that, you know, you really want to prepare like writing samples like in advance if you don't have like a body of work that's out there, because nothing's worse than it's like you reach out to a website and you're like, hey, you know, XYZ fantasy site, I'd love to be able to write for you. First question you're going to get, what writing samples do you have? And so even if you aren't published somewhere, have a couple of articles that you put together that you can send their way so they can get an idea of what your body of work that looks like. And so it's just easier to do that than being in a pressure situation where you've got 3 days to try to create like an article to get back to them. Not the best look. So prepare in advance. I'll say the second thing, social media. Take it seriously, like from day one. Treat the Twitter account like a business. I cannot stress that as much. Have a nice profile image, you know, information on the profile. Kind of keep it within like the guardrails of what you want to talk about. If it's a fantasy account, not saying that people can't do this, but you may not want to talk about like politics or underwater basket weaving if that's your thing, because you're like your followers like, I'm here for football, I don't care about underwater basket weaving, I don't care what your political whatever is. So keep it within guardrails of what you want to cover on the account. I would say, you know, really just get involved in the community. People tweet out there, comment on the tweets, tell them what they think, you know, share like a unique like opinion, pick your angle and go for it. you know, don't get wrapped up into your number of followers too. It's like, you know, you got some people out there, they're like begging for followers, right? We've all seen those tweets, Casey.
Yeah.
It's just like, hey, follow John Doe or Jane Doe, or, you know what, man, I'd really love to get over 1,000 followers. And they're like at 450. It's like, again, I'll do, I think this was from Four Brothers of Mark Wahlberg. Stop it. Don't do it. I would say something else is, like, you know, with really making friends that are out there. Like I mentioned, by working or writing for different sites, you're going to make friends along the way. But, you know, a well thought out, you know, DM on Twitter the right way, you know, isn't going to hurt. And I've done this before, and I still do it now. It's for where if it's someone in the industry, you're like, you know what, I'd really like to have a chance to chat with that person. Just send them a DM. It's like, hey, just want to reach out. I've been a huge fan of yours for, you know, for quite some time. I'd love to have a chance to connect. Hey, see how I can help you. But also, I'd love to have an opportunity to share my story. I'm like, the success rate on something like that, weave it any way you want, is very high by doing that. Plus, you make friends along the way. I would say something else. You've got someone that's out there. You may be this person for where you're like, you know what? I want to do sports like full time. And I get a lot of DMs on this. It's like, I've got like my 9 to 5 that I'm working, you know, right now. You know, how can I do this? And I would say one thing that you can do is just make sure you block out time to create content. You want to have a 9 to 5 that where you want to be able to work, excel like at your job, but have some flexibility built in for where you have time to do some of these additional things. I guess what I mean by that is don't have like a job for where, or you may have to make some adjustments for where it's like, you know, you work 40 hours a week, but really if they want you to work 60, they're just telling you you're working 40. You know, so you want to kind of have that type of job where you've got that flexibility. The reason I'm saying that is you want to make sure you block out time to create content. Find times that work for you. I was able to do this. You know, I had a wife, you know, I've got a wife, you know, I've got, you know, kids, you know, and throughout this journey, you know, had a second child. For me personally, it was either late at night or early in the morning were my favorite time. So another thing too, you got PTO that you got to burn at your job. You're like, I really want to get on that podcast or do that live stream or just extra time to create content. Don't be afraid to use your PTO. It's fine. If you got it there, you got something that you can use, hey, use your PTO. But I mentioned this too about like feedback. I would say the magic of feedback is important because it does put you in a position to become like a better person and professional. Just don't be that person for where it's tough to kind of take that feedback and don't get angry or upset by it. Don't try to be that person. I think it can help accelerate, you know, your journey as a content creator, but just really think about candidly, like, was that feedback really good feedback? Because feedback's a gift. Not everyone gives like the best feedback. So just kind of take it through your process of elimination is like, hey, there's some truth to that. I need to make that change. So I would say, keep that in mind. I got a few more here. This is something that's, it's going to sound very like corporate-y, but it works. Let me get a sip of this, peach tea here. Can't take the, I guess, the Southern out of me here. I would say this. Create your own, like, coaching action plan, like, every year. This ties into treating it like a business, because if you treat it like a business and you set goals for yourself in realistic time frames, you can further, you know, your progress, whether it's, I want to do more live streams, I want to get more comfortable on video, I want to do more podcasts, I want to write these different types of articles, or I want to learn to write about like a different sport, you know, stuff like that helps. And it's another way to help hold you like accountable. I think it's important to do like diverse like content too. And this has kind of changed like over the years. Like it's a lot more content creator jobs, thanks to the emergence of like sports betting, that have popped up more so before. Like back in like 2015, 2016, it was slim pickings. It just wasn't a lot of positions out there to meet the demand. I think we're getting closer to the point for where, you know, if you work hard, you know, do good work, you know, make friends, I'm like, opportunities present themselves. But I think what you should do too is you really have more diverse like content, like, and challenge yourself. You don't want to be the person where it's like, you know what, I only write player profiles. That's it. That's my jam. No. You know, you gotta expand. Like, you can write list posts, you can do player profiles, you can do positional previews, you can do DFS, you know, you can do betting. So you wanna kind of pick some topics or types of articles again each year, or or quarterly, however you want to do it, things that you want to expand on. So I think that's going to help. Now, something else is you want to have like a like an online like resume or just a resume that's ready. One page summary of your work experience and your background. I think what's even better, which I've seen more people do this recently, is to have like a website, that's up. Like I've got mine that's up. It's ericnmoody.com, where it shows you every place where I've written, a bio and links to all the content that I have that's out there. And I think that's important because if someone's kind of wanting to know, okay, well, hey, I want to learn more about John or Jane Doe, and then they're looking you up on Twitter. If you've got like a link or something like that to a site, that way it just comes off more professional, and I think they'll take you, they'll take you more seriously. I would say something else is really just to be dependable too. Again, I cannot stress this enough. It's like if an editor once needs you to write something and you raise your hand for it. And again, this ties back to know your limits. If you need to build your endurance more over time, you can. And, I'll give you like a number for those of the statistical type of people. It's like, I think since 2015 at this point, I've probably written over 600 like articles. It's like, you'll be able to crank out more content, like the more that you do it. Mm-hmm. It's just like with lifting weights. It's like, first time you're lifting weights, you're not putting like 315 pounds like on the bench press trying to lift it. You build up to that. Same thing with content creation. So, but you just want to be dependable. You don't want to miss like a deadline. I would say something else is just consider, writing about multiple sports or adding sports betting to your repertoire, I would say, because, the more that you can do, the better. It's like, I know football is the big thing. It's got the sizzle, fantasy football, but there's so much fantasy football content that's out there. But I'll tell you, there's not as much, say, fantasy basketball content that's out there. So that was a differentiator, at least for me personally. Now you've got over at ESPN, got to get the plug in. We've got the first season-long WNBA league that's there. I know the league's not as popular as the NBA, but still it's another fantasy avenue, which again for you could be a differentiator. Reason I say that is I write about three different sports: WNBA, NFL, and NBA, fantasy sports and sports betting for all three of those sports. So again, it's a way, you can create a lot of different types of content, really on both sides of the ledger. But I kind of went on a little mini rant here, but I know this is what you're looking for, Casey. I would say I'll close on this and I'll pass the baton back to you. Is I've talked to so many people and I've had them like reach out like on Twitter, like on DMs, where they're just like, I want to do it, but I've been in this career for so long. And you almost feel like you're like trapped in a way. It's like, I've been doing, say, marketing, or I've been doing accounting, or in my case, like financial services, for so long. But I'll leave you with this. And I do have some stats to support this, is that I'm like, the average age of person who changes careers is actually around like 39 years old. So don't be afraid to make the change. If you're mid-career in your field, you're like, things are stagnant, I'm not really enjoying like what I'm doing, I'm like, it's okay to switch like careers for a new job opportunity. I'm like, it may surprise people. Just be willing to make the change. If you want to. But I know those are some things I mentioned a lot of this like on Twitter, but it's just stuff that I thought would be valuable to share. But anyway, Casey, I'll pass it back to you.
No, you know what it is? I love this because it is very valuable. And I feel like sometimes on the show, I'll get like sidetracked and don't get to like the heart of it, which is helping people out. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And you put it beautifully. And it's so awesome to see that you're also willing to help, everybody out. People helped you out when you were starting out, and then you just kind of, pay it forward.
Yeah. And that is big, because it's huge to pay it forward. I think that's important. One thing that I was doing before kind of making this change is I was a people leader. I don't really like the term manager, because you think of someone that's like, micromanaging you like every 10 minutes, what you're doing. It was like a people leader, for where I would basically lead like a team of like financial advisors in like a call center environment. you know, I could say this now. I didn't really publicize this much in the past, but I worked at USAA. So the Gronk commercials, I see the tweets out there. I would kind of chuckle because I was like, it's funny because people talk about the Gronk commercials in USAA. But I did work there. And one thing I loved the most about being like a people leader was really like building relationships with those on the team, like building like team camaraderie and really doing what I can to help position people to be successful. So I just took a lot of pride in, you know, people that were, obviously took pride like in my coaching tree, you know, people that were promoted, or people that, ended up moving to other roles or people that even became like other leaders. And so that was, something I was really passionate about. I've been trying to find a way to kind of translate that, 'cause I still have like that itch for that on the fantasy side of things. And I think giving advice like I've given here, is one way to kind of pay it forward to that. So anytime I get like a DM or something on that, in many cases, I'll respond to it. Sometimes it may take me like a week or two to get to it, but I will eventually like respond, because I think it's important, you know, to kind of help kind of invest or develop kind of like the next, you know, next generation, I would say, or just people that are looking to be successful. So anyway, I just thought I'd throw that
in. You know, and you don't want to be that guy who never responds back like the the analyst we don't talk about.
It's funny. Anyway. Going back to that, though, it's funny because it's like the person that the analyst that will not be named. It's just funny because I'm sure the person's like, they're like, they have no idea that they're that person. It's just kind of like a running joke. Who knows? Maybe down the road, I may actually like let this individual know that they're this person, but they probably, you know, anyway, I digress. But I just think it's funny. They were kind of like one of the catalysts for me to take this journey. They were one that kind of gave me that gentle nudge. Just like, forget it. I'm just going to dive in myself. So.
Well, if you ever let the cat out of the bag and let them know, then like, you have to tell me the story once it's out of the bag. Anyway, you'll come back for round two. But so people, the community is huge. I mean, there's the expo. We have Scott Fishbowl. We have all kinds of, you know, drafts out there. King's Classic. You've got, you know, it's just all over the board. There's so much different stuff that's so cool that brings the community together. And you had brought up Scott Fishbowl earlier, and that's something that gets brought up like almost every single episode. So we're on a streak here. That event, Scott Fishbowl, like how important is that to like the fantasy football space in general?
No, I think it's great because you have an opportunity to, you know, to donate, you know, money, whether you're just donating like cash or you're buying like shirts and different merchandise and things to support, you know, a good cause. So I think that's obviously the first thing that's a benefit, but it's just a way to kind of bring people together. And what's great is that it brings together, it's not just other, you know, content creators, and you've got fans, you know, that are able to join, and it's really just keep getting bigger and bigger, you know, like each year. And so it's just a way to kind of, again, make friends, you know, make connections. And I think it's been a lot of, really a lot of like analysts, I think, that may have kind of gotten a start or I would say just things have kind of accelerated for them by going through this. Like I'm thinking like one name off the top of my head, I'm just thinking like Troy, you know, Troy King, just with him being able to participate in the Scott Fishbowl, kind of getting to know like other people. 'Cause again, relationships are important. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of Twitter. It's like people think it's kind of just a site to tweet stuff or stats or like opinions, but it's really, at its core, like a networking site. It's just a way to kind of connect like with other people. I think if you approach it that way, I'm like, you'll have a lot more traction. But I think that's one kind of indirect benefit like of the Scott Fishbowl, outside of just the money that's raised, you know, for charity and the kind of support really, really great causes, is that it kind of brings the community together in like a different type of way that's hard to replicate, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
No, that's definitely it. And it's just so awesome to see, and people who don't know what it is, they need to check it out, scottfishbowl.com, because like seriously, the good it does. And even if you're not a part of it, just taking the time to like have your league do something charitable or something, you know, find a way to donate, even if you're not actually in it, it's just such a great thing to see. And you talked about like Troy and people who have come out of like, being a part of the Scott Fishbowl, which is awesome as well. And like, I mean, honestly, I started in the Scott Fish Bowl as a fan. So like, yeah, that was super, you know, so it's super awesome to be able to interact with all these people. Mm-hmm. And when people reach out to you, I know we were talking about writing, but I want to talk about like podcasting and, you know, the visual aspect of everything. Mm-hmm. Had you ever done any podcasting, radio work or anything like that prior mm-hmm. to, you know, getting involved in the fantasy space?
No, I had not. It's just, well, I'll take that back. I did do like a radio show, like when I was in college. It was like the old school rock show. I'm just a big, you know, rock fan, you know, heavy metal, you know, classic rock, you name it. Like my favorite, I'd probably say my favorite like rock musician or just musician in general is like David Bowie. But, you know, I'm like a metalhead. You know, I love Metallica, you know, Megadeth, Fear Factory, all these different bands, you name it. I'm the bald dude that's the head banging, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's me. That surprises a lot of people. But to your other question though about you know, with I would say the thing that helped me out a lot was really just with having to present like a lot of things, and it kind of ties back into sales. It's just you have to, you know, do a lot of presentations, and you got to listen for visual cues or physical cues if it's in person, you know, things like that. I would say a thing that helped me out, which is unorthodox, is that whenever I work for Vector Marketing, for those that don't know, Vector Marketing is, you know, Cutco cutlery, you know, the high quality, you know, kitchen cutlery, you know, that kind of thing. I had to do a lot of calls to set up appointments. And so I would do probably like around 50 to 100 calls like a day when I was working with them to set up my appointments. So it really put me in a position to kind of talk to strangers, be able to think on my feet while talking. You know, I would have my scripting and verbiage, things that I don't want to get out, but just to be able to kind of connect those dots and then to tie that back to the financial services piece. That was the way I started off initially. It was just, I was doing like a lot of cold calling back before the do not call list. So I would just kind of call people, you know, let them know, you know, my name, who I work with, what I do and how I do it. And so just with so many calls, it's like you can just connect things like on the fly to make it sound great. The reason I'm telling you this is that really helped out, like with the podcasting piece, to be able to, you know, answer a question, to bring it together concisely, you know, put it out there, weave in the fantasy advice and those different types of things. So I guess what a takeaway for people that are listening, just kind of take some of the things that you're doing like in your 9-to-5 or previous career and just apply it to fantasy. So that was something that I know I personally tried to do and felt like I had a lot of success with doing it. So
I actually had that written down because I did want to bring that up. And yeah, that's great. I mean, because you see a lot of people taking like their, you know, full-time job or whatever they're involved in at the moment and taking part mm-hmm. of whatever and applying it. You know, like you see the doctors on Twitter that mm-hmm. are, you know, or you see somebody that, you know, deals with weather, you see this, that, and you find mm-hmm. a way to tie it all back in and kind of take pieces. So it's really good that you mm-hmm. brought that up. And you know, so if you, you know, go into podcasting, or when you went into podcasting, mm-hmm. were you nervous to start, or how were the feelings and the emotions going into it?
Yeah. Me personally, like I wasn't really nervous because I took it like for this approach, like if I was able to make a presentation to like a prospect, like a potential client that's looking to invest like X amount of dollars and they want to know, okay, well, tell me about your group, you know, your investment process, you know, what are the recommendations? I felt like if I can handle that, you know, as like a young man, it's like going on a podcast talking about football, that didn't really like intimidate me. But I'm not saying everyone is like that. If you're someone where you're like, you know what, I'm scared to death to go on this thing to talk or to do this live stream, I would say, first of all, I'll give you that gentle like push to push you off the ledge and just do it, because I think the more that you do it, the more comfortable that you will become. But I will give you some tips. Like if you're going onto a podcast and you're wondering, okay, how am I going to approach this? First of all, I would ask the host, like, hey, what's the show sheet? What are the questions that you're going to ask me? Not necessarily to script out your responses, but I would just kind of put bullet points on things you may want to talk about or hit on. And then I would even go as far as just to kind of role play it with yourself. It's not a bad idea to do that. So it's just like, okay, so what are your thoughts on player A? And then just time yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I know like with doing like the podcast, and especially with doing like live TV, like, you know, for some of the ESPN stuff, it's like, you don't have a lot of time to meander. You've got to get straight to the point, you know, 30, 40 seconds tops, you know, like, you know, state your case and move on. And so I think you could take that approach easily if, you know, if you're going on the podcast for the first time, is just script it out and say, you got to convince that person or answer that question. Give yourself 30 to 40 seconds tops. And then just to see how it sounds. If you really want to get hardcore, I would even use your recorder on your phone to record your response and listen to it. Again, if you want to take it to the next level, those are just some tips that you can do. And the reason I say that is that I would do that, or I would record like whatever my sales pitches were for the different products I was positioning, just to see what it would sound like. Now, it's uncomfortable listening to yourself, but if you can get over that, I'm like, again, you can hit the ground running. I will close on this and bounce it back to you. Now, video, that's a different animal. So, you know, you got audio, you've got that on video. It's a lot of different things that you may have to consider. Like, and I would say, like, on the kind of the stream that we're doing, it's very chill, you know, it's very laid back. But if you're doing like a kind of like a live stream, you want to try to get in the habit, if possible, you know, kind of looking at the camera, you know, kind of stating your responses, think about body language and how you position, you know, hand gestures if you want to do that, you know, just different things like that you got to consider. So again, I think the best thing that you can do, or the one takeaway, if you take one thing from this, is just get out there and do it. As human beings, we spend so much time kind of thinking, contemplating whether I should do this or not, and I want to make sure it's perfect before doing it. The only way that you get close to perfection, because perfection's unattainable, is that by getting out there and doing it. It's more about the reps and the repetition than perfection, because you're going to fall, but, you know, just get right back up. So anyway.
No, the reps is like the main thing here, because like, yeah, for any aspect of what you're putting out, the more you do it, you know, the more you learn, the more you get better. So perfect. Exactly. Was there anything though that like you wish that like somebody would have like told you like right prior to, I know you're giving it really great advice, but is there something that maybe gets overlooked?
Yeah, I would say it's, I would say that with the way the industry has changed now is, I just wish that going back, if I could do one thing differently, I would have diversified like sooner. Cause I was primarily focused just on like written content, you know, try to crank out as much high quality written content as you could. And, one thing that kind of pushed what caused me to push myself even more was that, you know, I would see a lot of these, and I'm gonna tie it back to that. I'm bouncing around, but I would say, for one, just to diversify, just hold that thought. I would say one thing I was thinking with others that I was seeing in the industry that were kind of working full time is that my whole mantra was that, you know what, I want to create as much high quality content as, you know, person A, B, or C is doing, while still holding down like a, you know, 40 hour a week like job. I just want to prove to myself that you know, that I can do it. And so that was something that kind of drove like me, for where I'm like, I can still crank out, you know, 3 to 4 high quality articles a week. It's just all about like kind of time management and how you prioritize your time. And I'll tell you this may hurt for some people to hear, you know, hey, less Disney Plus, you know, less Netflix, you know, take that out. You know, it's amazing how much additional time that you can find, you know, by taking out some of those things. Now, again, I'm not saying never watch Netflix or Disney Plus. It's just kind of do it at a time where your brain is completely like wiped and you're like, I can't come up with any kind of content right now. I'm maybe a couple of hours before bed. I'm just going to watch like, you know, Moon Knight or Ozark or something like that. So again, with the diversify piece, and I'll kind of close the loop on that, what I mean by diversify is that, because when starting out, I was all about the written content, for where it's like written, you know, something that was on a website. But what I would have done differently, or wish I could have done differently early on, was just to do not only written content, but more like audio content, more video content, just to kind of do a lot of those different things sooner, which that would be the advice or something I wish I could do differently. Because if you end up doing that, it's going to build up a pretty nice portfolio for yourself. If, you know, if you're looking for someone to hire you, just to have all those different examples, which again, I got another dot or branch that I can go off on, which could be useful, is you want to think about too, is that you never know. You really never know like who's watching. You never know who's watching. You know, it could be people that are following you that you just never knew that they were. where you can kind of be like on the radar of the stuff that you're tweeting out or the podcast appearances that you're on and things like that. So just be mindful of that. And I kind of know that through like personal experience, because really a lot of the opportunities, bigger opportunities that I've had, whether it's like, you know, at The Athletic or now like at ESPN, is that it would just come from some of the podcast appearances or live stream appearances that I were, you know, that I was on, and you know, articles that I've written, and then just being on Twitter too. Because you never know who's watching. People are seeing what you're mm-hmm. tweeting out there and that sort of thing. So just keep that in mind. But anyway.
Well, having like, you know, The Athletic under your belt and, mm-hmm. and ESPN, I mean, those are mm-hmm. huge companies that people aspire, a lot of people aspire, and then, you mm-hmm. know, to get to. And there are a lot of people also in the space that they don't want to do it full time. They just, they're mm-hmm. just doing it as a hobby. And a lot of, there's a lot of overlap there too.
Yeah, exactly.
When you're putting out content, do mm-hmm. you think about how you're presenting it to a giant group of people instead of like mm-hmm. a specific group, or how do you go about making sure that it's content that everybody can understand?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I may hurt some people here by saying that, but hey, here it is. That I think that sometimes we get like really enamored. You can even say like we get intoxicated with like a lot of like advanced metrics and things like that. Like I'll give you like an example. It's like, you know, I really love running back A. He's such a great player. You know, he played like 80% of the snaps and last year, and he had this, you know, XYZ metric. He ranked like fifth in this, and you know, he had this and he had that, and we go on this long like diatribe about player A. But at the end of the day, a lot of fantasy players are not very like sophisticated. It's like you can weave some of that stuff in, but just don't overdo it or overkill it. Make like a point or two on, you know, why you should target this player, why this player is positioned for success, and to really keep it kind of simple and like concise. And the reason I say that is that really like whenever I write something, I just want to make sure that if I have to explain it to like my kids who were, I've got like a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old, I'm like, if they can understand it, like what I'm saying, then I think I'm in a good place. Or just someone, and like I use kind of my wife as like a litmus test too on this, mm-hmm. is for where she's not the biggest sports fan. It's like if she can kind of understand it, then I believe like the masses could understand it. Because again, like the largest audience that's out there is not necessarily other like analysts. Mm-hmm. It's just people that may be in a work league. You know what? I really want to dominate my work league. I just need to know who to target and why. You have a little bit of rationale behind it that makes like a big difference. So that's kind of the mindset, you know, that I have when I creating like content, and that's worked out well, you know, at The Athletic and also like at ESPN, just kind of giving them enough and keeping it simple.
Well, that's great, because yeah, I have a hard time with writing. I don't do most of the analytics stuff, so yeah. I have a hard time Yeah. So, but then you find what you're good at and what you're not good at and what you can improve and what you can't, and like, you know, and it's cool to be able to like get the reps in and figure out exactly what you're able to do.
And I've got something else that'll hit on that. Like it ties into the financial services piece that I think is huge. Like another great example is that, like, if you look at like investment advice, there's like two camps. And I'm going to tie it to football. I'm going to chuckle at this, is that you've got folks that are like, you know, fundamental analysis is kind of their thing. They're like, I'm looking at this company. They make this product, this service. Here's their balance sheet. Here's their earnings coming out. You should buy this company because of this. You got technical analysis people that are like, they look at a lot of charts and things. They're like, you know what? Looking at this point and figure chart, there's like a dip here. It's still trending down. Look at the sell signal that's here. It looks like it's bottoming out here, but this is like building up a powder keg. Here's this buy signal here. This is trend. This is showing that it's going to go up. We should buy here. And so it's like what's like with fantasy football. You got folks that are like die hard, like film people that are like die on that hill and like fight you tooth and nail. And you got the analytics side for where it's just like they're all analytics. Oh, I don't watch film, yada, yada, yada. why not just play the piano like with both hands? So yeah. You can weave both of those worlds together. But if you're someone that's not really that big, like on the analytics, you can still tell the story and convince, you know, the reader on this player should be on their radar, they should draft this player, target this player, etc. So you can still do it. But to your point, Casey, it's really about knowing what your kind of what your strengths are and just leaning on those. And then also, too, don't be afraid to kind of learn you know, and to grow, kind of goes back to that coaching action plan. If it's something you want to know more about, just add it to your list just to learn more about it. And then when you're comfortable, weave that in. So there you go.
Yeah. And like when I first started playing Dynasty, I made a series out of learning how to play Dynasty. Like you can take your experience and put out content with what you're learning. So yeah super awesome. When you, when you talk to people, when you're giving them advice, do you ever tell people like there's a specific like app or a specific product that you've found to be like game changing when it comes to putting out content?
Like a, like just an app for like another content creator?
Like if there's like, well, no, like, or is just... there like maybe like I always bring up Grammarly, for instance.
Oh, gotcha. Grammarly.
So something like that, you know? So is there something that, you know, or anything that's made life easier for you or has, you know, changed the game for you, even if, you know, whatever, a product or some, anything that's really changed the game?
Yeah, I would say like, you know, like programs, you know, like Grammarly and some of those things that kind of help your grammar or how to rephrase things. I think those things are always like valuable just to kind of see if it's a different way to phrase something. The reason I say that is that you got, sometimes whenever you're writing something, and there may be someone out there that's listening that struggle with this, if you're writing something and you're doing your first draft and you're trying to make sure each sentence sounds like perfect, what I would just recommend is just throw everything that's out there, even if it's the grammar is not really what you're looking for. Like, hey, player A is Greg's, player A plays for this team, they're yada, yada, yada. You know, don't try to go for perfection necessarily on that first write-through. You want to get your info that's out there. Then on the second go review of that piece, that's where you can kind of use Grammarly, kind of tweak some of the grammar, see if you can kind of condense a sentence, phrase it like a little bit differently. So I think Grammarly's worked out, you know, really well. I would say another one that I really enjoy is like Google Keep. Or like Evernote, like programs like that, where you can add kind of like notes on things that may pop into your mind, or just different stats or kind of like opinions. So that really comes in handy. And again, you really want to think about like what's your thesis, what you're trying to say. If it's like you should target like player X, here are three reasons why. You know, you can just outline that article. And figure out what support that you need on it to kind of support that article. And there's a lot of different places like for stats where you can go. You know, you can go to, you know, RotoViz, you know, ESPN's got stats and things that they have out there, you know, NFL Next Gen stats. There's a lot of different things that are out there that you can use to kind of help support your opinion. But I think if you just kind of write it out first just to see if your thesis is sound, see how you can support it. So I think that helps. And I use like Google Keep or like Evernote, you know, is another program. I think that's free that you can use, you know, for stuff like that. I'm just trying to think if there's any other, kind of any other programs. I'd say the Google suite of programs are huge for me. Like I do all my drafts and things like in Google Docs, you know, Google Keep is a big program. I'm gonna look at my phone too to see if
there's anything else. Cause I mean, it's crazy because you'll stumble across something that's like ends up being really helpful. And it's like, wow, if I would have known about this sooner, then, you know, my life would have been a whole lot easier.
Yeah. So. I would say those are really the bigger ones for me. Just having something where you can take like notes down on things, you know, that pop into your head. So I think that's key. I would say another one is like going back to the Google suite is like Google, like Google Alerts, with keeping up on news. Like I have like alerts that are set up for like different like key terms or different teams. So that kind of helps, you know, to when you see something that's published, at least on the internet, about like that team or term, you know, you can find that info like easily. I would just say just kind of having a just kind of having like processes and how you approach like your day. Like I'm kind of big on kind of time management type things. Just to be able to get the most done, like really having like a list. I kind of use like that getting things done like methodology where you can do like a mind dump of everything that randomly pops into your mind, whether it's like, you know, tweet something about nostalgia, tweet football, you know, just write article, just, you know, something, you know, so you can just get it out of your mind and onto something else. You don't want it to sit there in cloud. You ever had that where you're sitting there, you're thinking about something, it's like, man, I should really write that. And 2 hours later, oh man, I should really write that. And you're not really enjoying or focusing on other stuff that you're doing.
Exactly. 100%.
It's so just little things like that can make like a huge difference. So hopefully those are some tips that can help somebody.
Well, and you brought up your family earlier, and you've been talking about time management. So how do you make sure that you're doing the right balance of work and, you know, spending time with your family and all of that?
Yeah, I would say back in like in the earlier days before, you know, I was doing this full time, it's like figuring out those time frames that work well for you. Like I just knew for me personally, like at, you know, 4 a.m, you know, I knew that my, you know, my wife wasn't going to be up, or my kids definitely were not going to be up, you know, during that time, or late at night, and just kind of carving out time to do those things, but also strategically using like times, like break times, like at your job. Like if you, you know, if you know you have like a, you know, 40 minutes worth of breaks and like a lunch, just to use that time wisely, instead of talking at the water cooler, you know, just have like a notepad out or Google Keep, you know, kind of map out like an article. And then here's something else that would help someone is that writing, I think they call it like writing in chunks, is for where just kind of write something maybe like 100 to 200 words at a time. Mm-hmm. And if you do that throughout the day, it's easy to kind of build like an article like in a short amount of time. So I would say little tips like that allowed me to kind of maximize that time. But then just be deliberate like with, I guess like with family time. Like for me, I always like kind of getting like outside, like away from like a screen. You know, like walking the dog, you know, going to the park, but just be deliberate with the time and just kind of say, I'm going to do X, Y, Z at this time and don't deviate from it. Don't say, let's just hang out.
Yeah.
That never works well. Say, we're going to watch a show or walk the dog or play a board game.
Yeah, there you go.
Something like that. So stuff like that helps. I would say what's different now is that it's more exciting to have like more time to do it now since I'm full time. And I just really like time block. And I set like a timer, like on my phone or like a internet program just for where I may say, okay, I'm going to use this hour to work on a, you know, rankings or a fantasy football article. This next hour is WNBA or sports betting. This next hour is, you know, NBA. And I would just have like a, kind of like a list of things that I want to get done that day and like an editorial calendar. You can have that like on Google, where you just know what content is coming due and what time frame you have to work on it, just to kind of work on it a little bit at a time, just so you're not at a crunch when you have that deadline approaching. So that's something that's a lot different because it's like, I'll just give you like an example of this. It's like I've got NBA like betting picks that are due like every day, and that's been throughout the whole season, still continues during the playoffs. You can still bet during the playoffs. Now we got WNBA picks and like kind of fantasy like takeaways. And then those are like kind of daily like columns that I know I have to do, or, and they're like group columns. So I'm not responsible for the entire thing. It's like a portion, but I know I want to get my pick. And then there's other columns and things that I'm, you know, that I'll do that are just completely like my own that I know where these deadlines are coming up. Then you got rankings too. Like, you know, again, NBA, WNBA, NFL. So it's just, you kind of know what's coming up. It's just kind of time blocking to do it. But I'll tell you something else that I do, which kind of recharges me, is that I just like, all right, step away from the screen, you know, turn off the lights, lock the computer. And then like, I walk my dog probably like multiple times, like each day, just to be able to get out for like 15 minutes, you know, get some fresh air, you know, get some sunlight, and come back in, re-energize and kind of get after it. So little breaks like that really help out like a lot.
Yeah. Time management is not something I'm good at, but you know, I try to do that stuff, and it's really cool that, to, you know, hear you like break it down how you do it. So, you know, that's another learning process, but I'm sure that you tweaked it and you figured out what's worked best for you. You also talked about music and the type of music that you're into is more of the heavy metal, you know, the rock, the classic rock kind of stuff. And you listed bands. Do you like to go out to concerts?
I used to when I was younger, you know, before kids and everything. But I used to go to like a lot of shows, like, you know, I've seen David Bowie live, like on his kind of last tour before he, you know, it was kind of before he ended up getting like getting sick. But it was kind of where you had like a kind of like a little mini like heart attack. I was on that reality tour back in I think 2004. But you know, I've seen Bowie, you know Limp Bizkit, Fear Factory, Metallica, you know, just a lot of different bands. And so now I love live shows. You know, live, I enjoy watching live shows, and I play bass guitar too. So, you know, so music's always been something that's big. My mom was really big into music. And I know she's passed on at this point, but it's I remember going to see that David Bowie show, being able to see that with her. But yeah, she's always a lot of the music that I'm into, she was into when she was growing up, like Jimi Hendrix and, you know, David Bowie, all these different things. Like, I know she's seen like Led Zeppelin live, like in their prime. Awesome. Yeah. So music has always been huge.
That's awesome. Yeah. My mom, I mean, she's the same way, getting me, you know, to listen to like the Eagles and like the Rolling Stones and all that. I was like, okay. Yeah. So yeah, it's really cool how our family kind of imprints that on us. And speaking of family, are your family members, I know you that your kids are, you said 10 and 6. Are they interested in fantasy football, or are they interested in what you do, or how is their thought process on fantasy football?
Yeah, no, I think they are interested, you know, more kind of more my son than my daughter right now. We'll see. But yeah, they're just kind of fascinated, you know, with it, you know, and like kind of watching sports. I think they're more at the age where they enjoy kind of watching sports, you know, starting to learn, you know, kind of some of the players and different things. Like even like earlier today, he was talking about like with Giannis, because they had the Bucks and Celtics games on, and he's saying, "Oh, that's Giannis," because they kind of talk about him at school and different things like that. So it's just, he's at that age where he's you know, kind of understanding the players and likes watching the game. He loves basketball; he's played basketball, you know, for years. And so I was curious to see if that'll kind of develop into any, like, you know, content creating. But I just thought about one thing that would be good. I think it's a good skill for, I guess, kids to know about, which I may do like a thread about this. It's just with kind of learning about like with sports betting and kind of how it works. Not necessarily saying to go do sports betting, son, but just to kind of understand, like, you know, what's a total, you know, what's a spread, you know, over under, you know, stuff like that. I think will come valuable, just because as it becomes more prevalent in all, you know, all the 50 states. Hopefully we'll get there. We'll see. It's just something that's not going away now that it's legalized. But just kind of understanding, you know, that I think would be interesting. And I'd love, you know, for down the road, if he wants to do kind of more of this, I don't want to push him down that path, but just if he's like, you know, doing like a podcast or like a stream, or having him do like articles or stuff like that. But, you know, I'll talk to him about what I do. And you know, he just thinks it's awesome, you know, thinks it's different. So I guess whenever he does tell people, like, you know, what his dad does, they're kind of like, oh, really? Wow. That's, yeah. Yeah, it's just like, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So it's good.
It's crazy. I mean, it's 2022, and this is, you know, this is a career it's just something that you would have never thought when you were his age was something that you could do. Right. I mean, yeah. Really?
No,
so,
it's,
you know,
exactly.
It's crazy. It's mind blowing. And like this, the explosion of fantasy football and fantasy sports in general, and sports betting and everything else. It's just awesome to see. Do your friends, since they know what you do for, you know, a living, obviously, do they hit you up for advice for drafts and for, you know, leagues that you're not, you know, involved in? I know they
all the time. It's funny. Like, I've got a, yeah, folks that'll hit me up for like you know, the kind of like betting like advice, or, or just like on our family like text thread. It's funny where they'll ask about stuff. Well, what do you think about, you know, this team, or, you know, or this player and that sort of thing. But the funnier ones are like, I've got a really good buddy, or kids have been friends like since they were like born. It's where, like, it's always whenever he has like his draft, like he would hit me up for advice. And this was before, you know, I was been in the industry like full time, but I was like a writer at this point. He was like at a draft, like, and it was a live draft for where, God, I'm trying to think what year this was, but it was, you'll probably remember the names. It was, like Kareem Hunt's like rookie year. And it was like, he was in a live draft and like
one Spencer, of these, I'm sure.
Yeah. He was like, Spencer Ware ended up getting hurt. He tore like his ACL in the preseason. And he was in the draft, and I was like, well, I was like, I'm on the phone. It's like, you know, man, he had his Bluetooth on, trying to be discreet. It's like, yeah, you know that. I'm like, it looks like Spencer Ware got hurt. It looked bad. He's probably going to be out for the season. I'm like, I think whenever you're on the clock, you should pick up like Kareem Hunt. I'm like, just do it, man. Just do it. And so he ended up picking him up. And it's, I don't think that they knew that the news happened. They were like, oh, okay, Kareem Hunt. And they, you know, like the boards that you have back there, they go up, put the name on there, and there you go. And I think Kareem Hunt, I think he finished what, like, as a, he was definitely like a top six fantasy running back that year. It was like insane. what he was able to do. And so that was, you know, a good pick that helped him kind of win that league. And so, like, once they found out, like, you know, who his buddy was, and they're like, okay, it's like, you cannot talk to him during the draft again. It's like,
he's got a little bug in his ear.
It's like he's been banished. And so I would meet these guys in the league. It's like at like kids' parties and stuff like that. So it's pretty funny. It's hilarious. But yeah, they hit me up all the time. But no, I love it. So it's good.
And I'm sure they're going to be hitting you up even more now that, like, you know, rookie drafts are starting for Dynasty and we've got these, you know, startups and everything. When you draft, what is your favorite type of draft? Do you prefer the auction that you were talking about earlier, or is there a specific kind of setup that you prefer over the other?
Yeah, I would say for overall formats, this may be, again, controversial, is that I just prefer, like, redraft, like over Dynasty. It's just... Mm-hmm. I think when you look at like the market, more people, you know, do play redraft. You know, you got folks at a football season, oh, let me start up a league, you know, like a work league or a family league. And so, you know, it's definitely more of a market for that. The dynasty aspect is growing, but it's always good, you know, if you've got like a very active dynasty league where there's a lot of trades that are going on. I always felt like the perfect blend of that was like a keeper league. So I've always enjoyed like the keeper league that I was in. Unfortunately, it's disbanded, but just being able to have like a team and still weave in that dynasty element, saying, hey, I've got like three keepers that I can choose to keep, you know, going into the next season and kind of keeping those players. You know, that stuff like that was always like fun. Now you just think of like an example is like where you had like Odell Beckham, like his rookie year where, you know, he went, you know, gangbusters the second half of the season, won a lot of leagues for people. But being able to kind of keep him like where you ended up kind of drafting him or just picking him up on waivers, like at that steep discount going into year two, you know, so stuff like that is fun. So I would say probably redraft, you know, keeper leagues are always one of my one of my favorites. I would say if you're looking at like fantasy basketball, I just always like category leagues there. Not necessarily roto. Roto's fine, but just like I like the category leagues where you're going head to head and trying to win like different categories. It brings like a different strategy element than just going head to head points like with like with football. So that's kind of what immediately came to mind.
Keeper leagues, man. Those are like so underrated. Yeah, I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that in so long. I wasn't a keeper league for a while. Yeah, I kind of just dispersed. Mm-hmm. It was just like died out, but it was fun. Yep. It was really fun. So I totally feel you, and I feel you on the redraft aspect of it too. Mm-hmm. And those live drafts are, I mean, I know talked about them earlier, but yeah, they're super awesome. I want to go back real quick because before we tie everything up, you brought up playing the bass guitar, and that's really awesome to me, because anytime I find out that somebody can play an instrument, I'm like, how did you decide that was something that you wanted to do? How was the bass guitar what you decided you wanted to learn to play?
Yeah, it was it's probably not the grandiose like answer you're looking for, but it's like I really love like the drums, but whenever I started playing, it was like in college, and I didn't have the space for the drums, and it was going to be loud. And so I was thinking, well, next best thing, you know, drums are kind of tied to the bass, you know, the rhythm section, you know, I'll end up going with the bass. And so yeah, it was fun because it was it's something that unless you're like a musician, you don't really pay much attention like to the bass like on a song. And so it kind of caused me to appreciate like just music in general like a lot more, because I was able to listen to like a song, like a Led Zeppelin song, and just kind of listen to what like John Paul Jones like was playing like on bass. Because most people when they listen to music, they listen to for the guitar at first and like vocals. But whenever I listen to something, I listen to like for the drums and bass like first. And so it's forever changed like whenever I listen to something on how it goes. And so that's kind of how I ended up getting into it. I just gravitated towards obviously playing like more rock, but I ended up like a lot of jazz too, kind of playing along, you know, to that, and you know, played like in a lot of bands, especially whenever I was kind of in college or outside of college initially when I finished up. You know, that was always a fun experience, you know, just kind of playing like live. You know, nothing beats that, just the energy that you get from that, and you know, the crowd, and then just with practicing, you know, just, you know, just going
more reps.
Yeah, going through all those reps and playing the songs and just hanging out like after. So that was always fun. Also did like backing vocals too, and I know it was one band that we didn't really have a chance to get off the ground. I think about this every now and then, but it was a we're gonna do really just like old school rock, like rock blues covers like, you know, Cream, Sunshine of Your Love, Stormy Monday, you know, White Room by Cream, you know, songs, you know, like that. And that was going to be like the first group where I was able, I was going to be able to do like lead, like vocals on, but then like Hurricane Katrina hit and it kind of disrupted a lot in my life during that time. So there you go.
Well, you know, it's, you know, we might get the band back together. We might get some bands back. We'll figure something out. I know there's lots of people in this space that play, maybe we can get a fantasy football, group together. That'd be pretty dope. Jam session.
That'd be cool.
I mean, it's really cool to find things out like that about people in this space. So that's just really super awesome. I'm getting all like fangirl moment, but like I can't play an instrument, you know? So I'm like, I get jealous when other people can. So pretty dope that you're so well-rounded. Now that, you know, we've talked a lot about like helping people out and all of that jazz, you want to go ahead and let the people that are out there listening right now know where they can find you and what kind of content you've got coming out and everything?
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to do that. Probably the best place, I'll say the easiest place to find me is on Twitter at Eric N. Moody. And I'll kind of tie back to that in a moment. I would say from a content creation side, for me, it's really, you know, written content, audio content, and video content at ESPN. Like everything is there. I'll do videos for ESPN Bets. You know, I make, you know, live appearances on the Daily Wager on ESPN2. So I do a lot in that area. Also, you know, when you look at just content, I'm like, it could be NFL content, NBA and WNBA. It's fantasy sports related and sports betting as well. So I have like a ton of content, you know, that's being published every day. But one thing that I've recently started just to kind of make it a little bit easier for people to find me, because I know not everyone is on social media, is if you're on Twitter, you know, go to my profile. You know, I did start like a newsletter. It's called just, you know, Moody Direct. And really, it's going to include, you know, just some, you know, commentary from me, like updates, but also just links to everything that I have that's published like at ESPN. Or if you're wondering, okay, where's Moody's WNBA picks, you know, for today, or his, you know, NBA picks for the playoffs, or, you know, fantasy football content, et cetera. I'm like, it'll be a link to where you can find that, like, on the website. So I felt like that would be a better way to kind of inform people about what's new and what's out there, as opposed to just tweeting out, like, a link. And so I just encourage everyone to sign up for that newsletter. It's free, so it's a free newsletter. It's just mainly another way for me to connect with my audience. So again, I encourage you to follow me on Twitter and sign up. So
there you go. All right. Yeah. Do what the man said. Go follow him on Twitter. Check out all of his excellent, excellent content. And make sure to come back next week to another episode of Get Real with Casey Kasem, and stay